You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right. 7:07 in the morning. Christopher DeSimone and you good people, the Wakeys. It's the anniversary week. Tomorrow, Joe's going to come back and do 3 hours of radio with me. Chef John Holm from Gap Ministries to preview the menu for our amazing live remote on Tuesday will be our Food Friday. Remember, get tickets at wakeup.gapmin.com. McCluskey in the third hour. Aldo from the Rito Racetrack is going to come visit us tomorrow. Should be very, very fun. So remember, get your tickets to the remote breakfast at Gap Ministries for Tuesday the 4th at wakeup.gapmin.com. All right, let's go to the phones. Survive the Grand Canyon, I assume because he's calling us, and a $23 hamburger at the McDonald's right outside the gate.
Actually, it's the Wendy's, but we have this weird tradition. I've been doing this for like 40 years, is get out, get a root beer float.
You earned it, as we like to say.
At that moment, I've earned every bit of that sugar and carbs.
How was the trip across?
I'm impressed you're putting the band back together. For a week.
Absolutely. Joe comes back for special. We trot him out for special days. You know, it's kind of like Jerry Lewis bringing Dino back for a MDA telethon. So.
Yeah, well, all right. I like it.
We play Send in the Clowns. It's beautiful. So,
and I apologize if I have a bunch of background noise. I'm walking back into the Cannon House office building, so I'm bouncing between meetings.
How did you know, last time you left us, you and the geeks were going to get together and wonk out on some numbers.
The Economist, sure.
Y'all quote The Economist. How did that meeting go?
We did it again this morning. We do, sometimes twice a week because we're trying to keep track of what the hell's actually going on out there. The latest thing we're looking at is trying to calculate if bank deposits in small, mid-sized banks are dropping because people are moving to safety. Does that mean loans in Tucson and Phoenix for smaller businesses shrink?
Right.
And it's a real number. We're working on things like that because you're trying to understand what does it mean for tax receipts? What does it mean for economic growth? And that's part of our job.
I was looking at a story this morning about the had to do with the amount of money that's missing that has to do with COVID money for private schools, not the public schools, and it's some horrible number like $736 million. So I was deciding I should ask David about what's going on in the world of COVID fraud and tracking down all of those zillions of dollars that were supposed to go out, maybe weren't spent. Give me the Schweikert report on those dollars, please.
It is pretty much close to $1 billion. I'm of the school that this is the largest fraud almost in human history. And you got to walk through this with me because it's in a couple different tiers or pillars or however the hell you want to call it. The government analysis say, hey, it may be $140 billion of unemployment fraud. We have an outside analytic group because, no, we think it may be as high as $400 billion of stolen unemployment money. And so we're doing something a little different in Ways and Means Oversight. We're actually trying to understand how they did it. So we're breaking it up. The whole committee is going to go after the failures of the bureaucracy of state unemployment offices. We want to understand how they wash the money. And for anyone that's listening in Tucson, if you ever saw the Craigslist ad saying, hey, we have a job opportunity, go to this P.O. box, grab these checks, find some way to cash them, turn them into gift cards, turn the gift cards into cash, turn the cash into Bitcoin, send it to us in Serbia. We're trying to get a couple people who've been convicted of this and see if we can actually work out a deal with the DOJ and others saying, we want some of the perpetrators of the money laundering to actually come and testify. So this is a big deal, and it's just been painful, because every time we think we're understanding what happened, it turns out there's another wrinkle of another part of the scam.
What was the where was the damage on the PPP money in relation to that kind of fraud? What's that number at?
See, that one we don't know yet. We're still diving into that. So you got to remember, you had on the unemployment, we still think maybe the biggest. Then we also have a lot of the other COVID monies out there. We're trying to track it down, but we could be looking at several hundred billion dollars that was either misspent or just absolute fraud.
So there's definitely
it makes you almost, when you sit with the team, you almost shake in anger when you're seeing how this was handled.
We all know some business people that we may know that took PPP money, and there was no evidence they actually spent it on anything that had to do with their business or employees, right? And so for those people, is the federal government really going to track them down and go, hey, bro, why didn't you spend the money on that?
But remember, that's actually the easier money to track. And that's already being chased. And it's not a good look when you needed the payroll protection money to protect your business, and the next day you're driving a new McLaren.
Right.
The unemployment fraud is the one that we're fixated on at this moment. We're working on the others, trying to build the data files and trying to figure out, meet with the investigators. But that one we think may be four or five times bigger.
Yeah, I know some couple of businesses in the state where the owner took the PPP money and then immediately closed and retired.
Yep. Right. And that's actually an absolute violation. Now you've got to help me find a way to chase down and say, I'm sorry, taxpayers deserve that money back. And so this is going to be going on for years.
87,000 IRS agents, right? No.
You laugh about it, but first off, there's not 87,000 out there to hire.
That's true, too.
It's just, so much of this is just made up math. That was one of the questions we had. Where in America are you going to find 87,000 people that qualify for an IRS job? So you got to pass the background checks and all these other things and have an accounting background.
Yeah, and just be good at math. I can't find Americans good at math.
And so that's actually one of the other things we're working on, is what would it take? The Department of Defense is substantially on highly encrypted cloud computers. They don't maintain their own servers and their own storage. Why the hell can't I get the IRS off of its own servers and its own storage? Because one of the funniest things in life is the report about the IRS's IT, their information technology in West Virginia's their server farm.
Right.
The floor is sinking into the ground because their old servers are so heavy. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. And then they fight with us when we want to say, why aren't you doing what everyone else has been doing for 20 years and get on the cloud? And you can encrypt it where it's functionally bulletproof.
You're so cute dancing through the garden of logic. I just love it.
It's like the castle in Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Actually, somehow today is the day of Monty Python references. I swear, I was just running down the hallway and someone was clapping coconuts behind me. And you got to be a real fan to get that reference.
It's beautiful. All right, my friend, hold on for a sec. We come back. I was seeing that you guys were having a discussion about diabetes. So we're going to have a diabetes. We're going to get you off the numbers wonking, and we're going to do some diabetes talk when we come back, okay?
Done.
Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, Congressman Schweikert, Tim Sandifer from Goldwater at the bottom of the hour about the judge's ruling for the city of Phoenix to finally clean up the zone crap. Wake up. All right, we're talking about Monty Python with Congressman Schweikert, so we figured to go to the constitutional peasant scene, which I will never not laugh out to the day I die. So, watery tarts tossing scimitars is no basis for a system of government. Just let everyone know that. So,
Oh.
Farcical aquatic ceremony.
David, welcome back.
You got to stop these sophisticated highbrow humor. I mean, you know.
So you mean I got to go right back to Benny Hill? Is that what you're telling me?
You know, look, it's one of the reasons I absolutely love you guys and just sort of talk radio is the fact that you get people who are engaged. You and I may not absolutely agree a policy, this and that, though you should.
Thank you.
But it's a self-selecting population that, and this is a technical term, they give a damn. They're actually interested in what's going on. Take a look at the cars around you if you're a listener. How many of those people do you think are actually listening to talk radio? They're trying to text and listen to music. And you wonder why we have so few people that understand what the hell's going on in our communities and particularly this federal government.
Amen to all that, man. You know, they're looking for distraction, right? And talking about what we talk about is a little too much reality. So distraction's
easier.
Yeah,
and look, it hurts. I mean, on occasion, you know, I'll get my truck and home, and I got to turn it off. You know, now in my case, I'm just constantly angry at everyone for not understanding how ugly the numbers are. But that's a personal problem I have.
So my brother Joe has a philosophy degree from the University of Arizona, and I remember a book that he was reading in those days was called "Amusing Ourselves to Death." Amusing Ourselves to Death about the distraction of media and things. And
yeah,
we used to kind of kid around by it, but that guy was a freaking prophet in 1993.
I had a pollster grab me a couple of weeks ago at the retreat and was talking about if I can't find a way to do my budget discussions on something like TikTok, I'm never going to have anyone under 35 know what the hell I'm talking about. And I'm just looking at him going, okay, you want me to do population demographics and what's happening in the collapse of the economics and the debt and those things, and you want me to do it on a TikTok? We've all lost our blanking minds.
So it's interesting. So the I saw this on your Twitter page. You guys had a discussion talking about stabilizing a pre-diabetic population.
Yep.
So was this Ways and Means you guys were having this discussion?
Yep. We had the HHS secretary.
Okay. And so diabetes, so with all of our health care, and we're talking about, you know, we talk about how do you, you know, we talk about the numbers of Medicare and Social Security, right? But when we talk about the general health of America, it makes all of these numbers worse. Okay.
Oh, and it's, and post lockdowns, we have communities, counties. We actually, I think, have some states where in that functional, let's call it 2-year period of the COVID insanity, we may have doubled obesity in many of these places.
I've gotten to that point now that if we can solve a lot of problems if we can try to knock down the obesity problem financially, spiritually, otherwise.
Just morally, economically, in some ways, for those of us who are on the conservative side, it's actually the moral compassion of my urban poor, my rural poor, my tribal communities, saying, what would happen if I could slash diabetes? It's the single biggest thing you could do for income inequality, for economic growth,
yep,
and just the morality of not having your toes cut off and going blind.
So we could geek out. I can geek out on this for you for like another half hour because
okay,
I have a doctor here that I said to him last August, I said to him, I didn't have all my numbers are good. I'm not diabetic, all that stuff, right? But I said, hey, like I want to enjoy the next 30 years of my life, right? How do I do that better eating wise? And he introduced me to this guy named Dr. Jason Fung. You guys should have this guy. He's a Canadian endocrinologist. He does intermittent fasting, and basically he reverses people's diabetes without going to drugs.
Yep. Yeah, but
he is wicked smart.
But you got to have people who are motivated, saying, I'm changing
my dietary habits. I'm exercising. I'm going to take on those things. And now we also with the GLP one, and I'm screwing up the name, but the appetite suppressant, which apparently is very effective, though we don't know about its long-term, you know, hazards. And now there's a number of those that are coming out generic. Now with the through the skin glucose monitors, hell, it looks like Apple's going to have one on a watch in a generation or two. Our ability, that's what that discussion was. Diabetes is 33% of all U.S. healthcare spend, and 31% of all Medicare spend.
Oh.
So if healthcare is the primary driver of U.S. debt, over the next 30 years, we're going to add, you know, $100+ trillion of borrowing. 75% of that is just the financing of Medicare. What would happen if I can disrupt a big chunk of healthcare spending by making people healthier and taking on diabetes? It makes sense. It's great economics, and it's just moral. It's just the right
thing. So I'm telling you, you like to consume quality work. I want you to go. This is you. Sometimes you give me a homework assignment, I'm going to give you one. I need you to read The Obesity Code by Dr. Jason Fung. It's $12 on Amazon. Okay.
I'm heading to the airport in a few hours. It'll be my airplane reading.
And then he wrote one called The Diabetes Code. But literally,
I'd love to talk to this guy.
Go watch his YouTube videos. He is wicked smart. And basically in The Obesity Code, the first six chapters, he destroys the calories in, calorie out myth, right? That a calorie is a calorie, just obliterates it. And and he's basically about eating complete foods, right? Stop eating processed crap. Right.
Yeah. What? Look, he's already how my life is.
Right.
Because there's great. Because the fact of the matter is, there's some things that may be a calorie, but it takes your body a lot more energy to break it down. And so, yeah. And then what do we do as a society? We give nutrition support to people. We're going to send you an EBT card, which is food stamps, so you can go buy onion rings at Jack in the Box.
So if you
love Jack in the Box onion rings, but they're probably not what you should be eating.
If you took this guy. Right, and you took what he's teaching, and you made this part of a marketing campaign through the U.S. government on part of this battle. You'd be saving so many lives and improving them like you would never believe. This guy is the real deal.
I need to be a little more cynical. This government has tried multiple times to do marketing campaigns, and then we turn around and we subsidize. And this is controversial. It makes some people angry. But we subsidize functioning five commodity crops that have to be processed and processed and processed to become profitable. Go walk down your grocery store aisle and understand why everything's a derivative of soy and corn and wheat. It's because that's what we grow. Instead of North America used to grow 3,300 types of grains. Now, a lot of them were probably horrible. But you need to add that variety back into our society. Just to make us so if there was ever a fungi killing a particular commodity crop, we don't collapse as a society. So there are great ideas. There's possibilities. We as conservatives need to push for freedom.
Read that book. You'll be much smarter after reading it, I promise you.
Thank you.
All right, my friend. Great job as always.
Travel safe.
You too, my friend. Tim Sanifer from Goldwater coming up next. All right, Frankie, we're celebrating Frankie Lane's birthday again today with along with Eric Clapton, Graham Edge from Moody Blues. Of course, they could Mel Brooks make Blazing Saddles today and release it in this environment? I do not know.
Tough call.
Let's go right to the phones. Friend of the show, defeater of worldview, Tim Sanifer. What's up, buddy?
I'm just great. Thanks for having me back.
Just want to let you know, Worldview is still a loser company here in Pima County, just to let you know.
Yes. Well, you know, that case is still not quite over. We still have to file some final paperwork in that lawsuit. So
beautiful. Beautiful. So we've been talking to you and, of course, Austin van de Heiden of Goldwater Institute about this horrible thing called The Zone. In Phoenix. We had Austin come down here and tour a place that's doing it better called the Center for Opportunity right down here by the Gospel Rescue Mission. And Tucson has lots of little zones, well, and larger zones blowing up all over the town. So we're very interested in this case. Tell us about the lawsuit and tell us about the judge's decision in the last 48 hours.
Yeah, it's not just Phoenix and Tucson. I mean, the homeless problem has exploded across the country, and particularly on the West Coast. And what the decision from this week from the Maricopa County Superior Court says is it orders the city to start enforcing the law, including the laws against public camping, which the city of Phoenix has for well over a year now has consciously refused to enforce in the zone. And that has led to the city of Phoenix operating basically its own open air homelessness shelter on the streets of the city, which now there's more than 1,000 people who are living in tents on the streets of the city, which has instructed its police officers not to enforce the law in this area. And so the judge in this case has ordered the city to put a stop to that, and by July 10th take steps to start eliminating this lawless section of the city.
So what's the timing of this thing work like, Tim? Like, when does it have to be done by? Is the city of Phoenix, are they going to be a bunch of babies and try to, I assume they're going to appeal this thing? How does that work?
Obviously the ball is in their court, and they do not have to clean up the zone by July 10th. They have to take steps in that direction and show the judge that they're actually trying to do something by that time. So this is really just the first step. But it's a very important one, because until now, the city, and this is not just true in Phoenix, this is true in a lot of other cities, but Phoenix leaders have been using an excuse for refusing to act. They've been pointing to this Ninth Circuit decision from 2019 called City of Boise, where the Ninth Circuit said that it was cruel and unusual punishment to arrest somebody for sleeping on the street if that person can't help it. And since that decision came out, city leaders across the country have been using it as an excuse for refusing to do anything about homelessness and refusing to enforce city laws, even against like people publicly urinating and defecating in the streets. And what this decision makes clear is that case does not say that. It does not give the city an excuse to ignore its own laws, and they have to start enforcing those laws by at least July 10th.
So we have various groups in Tucson that are trying to make this better for taxpayers, the working poor, and business owners. Some aren't, but so I've been a part of different discussions about down here about someone suing or a group suing the city of Tucson. How would this play out in setting any sort of precedent for a group maybe in Tucson to do something similar with the city of Tucson?
Yeah, it certainly could work. Now, it depends on the facts of this and circumstances. The Phoenix case, one of the important things about the case was there was testimony from police officers saying, we would like to enforce the law in the zone, and the city won't let us. And evidence that in the city police were actually taking people to the zone from other neighborhoods in Phoenix, and of course neighboring cities also, they've been telling their homeless population, oh, go down there to Phoenix because that's where you're supposed to be, which is a nice easy way for them to solve their homelessness problem, right?
Sure.
So there's been this behind the scenes conscious effort by the city to operate this zone, which. What the zone is it's a giant homelessness shelter that does not require you to stop drinking or using drugs to live there. In an ordinary homeless shelter, if you want a bed for the night, they'll let you have a bed, but you have to not use drugs and not drink on the property and so forth. And when offered the choice to do that, the residents of the zone have repeatedly said, no, we don't want that. We want to stay in our tents because we can continue to use drugs and so forth. And the city has been allowing that to continue, which is, again, that's not what the Ninth Circuit ruling said in that City of Boise case, and Phoenix has no excuse for doing that. So if people can prove the same facts in any other city, Tucson, Portland, anywhere else, then they can go to court and demand an order that says the city has to start enforcing its laws. That's what the city is there for. That's what their police are paid for. That's what city mayors and leaders are paid for by tax dollars, by the way, that are taken from small businesses who are being ignored and their rights violated, and nobody really seems to talk about that.
Yeah, we talked about that. I know it's been covered by the one lady who has that design studio or something down there, and she's gotten what her original appraisal for her to sell it, right? But of course, the appraiser said, "Well, with the zone thing there, basically, this is an unsellable property."
Right. Yeah, That's right. And it's, and there's lots of small businesses in this area who not only have their customers been scared away, but a lot of the homeless are suffering from mental illness or drug abuse and so forth, and they're dangerous and violent, and they're a danger to the employees of these small businesses. And so it's ruined that, and the public urination and defecation has physically damaged many of the buildings that are housing these businesses. So one of the people that we represented in the lawsuit in Phoenix, the Arizona Rock Products Association, they told how they had to replace all the seals on their windows in their building because they had been corroded by so much urine from the homeless population just peeing on the side of their building. And again, the city refuses to do anything. Yeah, precisely.
So one of the listeners just messaged me and wanted to know, because you mentioned it a little bit, that other cities are sending their homeless to Arizona?
Other cities in the Phoenix area. So we've received secondhand reports of, like, Tempe, for example, telling the homeless population, well, you go down there to the zone, they'll let you stay there. And, you know, it's convenient for the city of Tempe, right?
So next to the zone, there's the Cass place, right? I think it's called Cass, right?
Right.
And this is kind of the place where they can go get a meal and a shower. They're not allowed to stay overnight. Does that seem to be more of an enabler of the situation than a help?
You know, I don't know the direct answer to that, but there has been that sort of situation has come up before. In 1985, there was a case in the Phoenix area where a homelessness a kitchen, a church, you know, set up a kitchen for the homeless to come and get free meals, and this attracted such a large population of the homeless who then loitered in the area and stayed there and trespassed on people's property and damaged their property and everything. So they sued and said this was a nuisance, and it went up to the Arizona Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, yes, even though your motives are perfectly good, nevertheless, once you do something like this, if you are attracting people to this property and they're committing crimes, then you are responsible for the public nuisance. Well, the same rule applies to the city, and the city has been doing that in spades here. They've been inviting people to this area and refusing to police the streets, and as a result, you have violent crime, you have murder, you have arson. This is a dangerous fire area, and the city could take steps. The judge's opinion makes clear that the city could take steps immediately to help solve this problem by, for example, building a structured campground instead of just letting people pitch their tents on the sidewalks. And the city has refused to do that because they have this idea that, well, we don't want to build anything unless we can make it, you know, top quality, Cadillac quality housing for people. It has to have air conditioning, for example. And the judge's opinion, he points out, well, they don't have air conditioning in their tents as it is. So you might as well at least temporarily improve their situation with a structured campground while you find other solutions to this problem. But the city has pretended that its hands are tied under that Ninth Circuit ruling instead.
What does the so we have the dynamic down here. We're talking to Tim Sandifer, VP of litigation for Goldwater Institute, that cops are arresting some of these people. Well, and the city of Tucson's actually not getting, I think it might be a similar situation, or not happy with cops that are hiring, that are basically arresting crime breaking violent drug vagrants. But then they get to the courts, right? And you have these judges that are just kicking them back on the streets, or attorneys that don't want to prosecute, or county attorneys extra special down here.
Yeah. I think that is a major part of the problem. There's an ideological movement that has taken hold. I mean, it's always been around, but it has really taken hold in the past couple of years that for ideological reasons absolutely will not view the world in terms of people taking responsibility for their own lives. And that is why the city has been using the city of Boise ruling as an excuse, because they say, well, unless we can provide people with a shelter bed, then that means that they're involuntarily sleeping on the streets. But when you actually look at the facts, for example, there's another lawsuit actually against Phoenix about the zone. In that case, there's a couple homeless people who are the plaintiffs, but if you read their complaint, one of them has been living on the streets for 23 years, and another one testified that she gets Social Security income and keeps, like, food and clothing and all sorts of stuff in her tent. And, well, that's not involuntary. That's not somebody just happening to fall asleep on the street because he can't help it. These are people who have chosen this lifestyle, and if they've chosen this lifestyle, they can be held responsible for doing so. And it's become really popular politically in this country for the past couple of years years to say that there's something cruel about expecting somebody to take responsibility for their own lives. That's not cruel. That's expecting of them the kind of dignity that you would extend to any other human being. That is true compassion.
Well, I'm glad that you guys were in on this lawsuit, and let's see how it all plays out. And it's something where I know there's people down in Tucson that want to take a run at the city of Tucson for also abdicating their responsibility and in a legal manner, and that may come up one day. So
yeah, well, this is the first step of a long process, but it is a long overdue first step, and it is very welcome.
And then I know you were excited about the quesabirria tacos from Taco Rustico.
Oh, those look so good, Chris. Oh my, I had no idea. I may have to move, actually.
No, don't, please. Don't move down here. What are you, a psycho? So what I want you to do, maybe we'll have a meeting where you come down. I might have you meet with a couple of these frustrated business owners, and then we'll do it over quesabirria tacos. Is that okay?
It's a date.
All right, amigo. Thanks for all your help, and thanks for what you guys
do.
Thank you. There he is, Tim Sandifer. He is the VP of litigation for the Goldwater Institute. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Now, here's some freedom. This is also on the Freedom Rock commercial, I believe, Matt. Clapton's all over it. He's all about freedom.
That's right.
I won't tell you that he did a beautiful little acoustic piece to honor the life of John Wetton right after he died. So even Clapton... little prog rock with Chris's guys. I'm just telling you. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. All right. Little moody blues. So coming up, remember at the April 4th is the day where everyone's got to have their signatures in for getting on the city ballot for November, or if there's a primary. Ed Ackerley's crew will be at two locations simultaneously tonight. They'll be there from 5 to 7 gathering signatures at the Gaslight Theater on Broadway and the Maverick on Tankaverde. Again, 5 to 7 p.m. They will also be out Friday, Saturday, and Sunday also. So if you can drive by, encourage your friends to do it, stop by and sign sign those. And then I think Ross is going to call up Kaplovich. He was texting me about some kerfuffle with the city clerk's office, and he's going to need a little help too. So that should happen. So let's just bring on Cowboy Dave. What the hell? 790-2040. Cowboy Dave. What's up?
Hey, my boss's son-in-law is really good buddies, friends with Van Morrison. And every year they come over from they come down for the holidays, and he was telling me about Eric Clapton, and you know Eric Clapton, 78 years old today. Man, God bless you, brother.
Yep.
Cream, I saw them back in the 70s. Man, so he was telling me about Eric Clapton and Van Morrison. They were so not in favor of the vax and the lockdowns and the mask mandates. They were losing money.
Sure.
And no concerts. And to this day, I mean, they are so livid about the way, especially England and over in Europe, they were being treated, man. They were like second-class citizens if you didn't get mask and lock, you know, get the vax. But I tell you what, yeah, Van Morrison, can you imagine? I mean, that guy's something also. I mean, he's a good musician, a composer, you know, and Eric Clapton, man. All right, Christopher, you have a blessed day.
Thanks for sharing that, buddy.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Yeah, I mean, so my thing with Clapton, right, is he one of the greatest guitarists of rock history? The answer is yes, right? And for me, it's the idea that he leans more on the blues side of what he does. And Dee Simone doesn't lean that much on the blues side when it comes to music. So when, you know, whenever we have our top guitarist discussions and Dee Simone isn't leading with Clapton or especially Stevie Ray, a few of you get your haunches up, which is okay. I get it. You want to protect in your crew. But that's my thing, right? So is Stevie Ray and Eric Clapton two of the greatest rock guitarists? Well, hell yes. I just don't play them that much because I was never into... I don't know, the bluesy side of stuff didn't really appeal to my brain. So Different strokes is for different folks, as the great Arnold Jackson once said. So let's go to city council candidate, Republican Ross Kaplovich. Ross, what the hell's going on out there, buddy?
You know, same stuff here in the city of Tucson. You know, 2 years ago I told Regina she should resign or we'd remove her from office due to revoking our permit 5 minutes before the close of business the day before a holiday weekend. But, you know, she was able to paint the BLM and put a banner on her building at our taxpayers' expense.
That's right. So you were texting me about, you know, we talked earlier about a week or two ago, and you were looking really good on all of your signatures to get on the ballot. So what happened when you got to the city clerk's office?
She told me that the form was a little different, but all the verbiage was correct, and that they would accept the petitions, and hopefully nobody challenged, so that way we wouldn't have an issue. And once again, at 5:30 p.m. the day before, one business day prior to a holiday weekend, they sent me an email, and this was straight from the city clerk. The city clerk told me she would accept them. Anyway, they sent me an email last night at 5:30, you know, on the way out the door, saying that my petitions are null and void because on top it says City of Tucson Ward 4, and down where it says where I'm running, it says City Council and position sought. So the petition, they're saying, is misleading and that they're not going to accept my signatures and I have to start from scratch.
Oh, my Lord. So how many signatures did you bring to them originally?
649 on paper and 65 electronic signatures on eQual.
So now you're...
I think that they're just scared that I may make change to the city of Tucson along with my team of Republicans, and they're just looking to, you know, for the second time say, hey, let's get rid of this guy.
You think, I mean, does someone think Nikki Lee wants competition in November and she actually has to defend herself for basically being the invincible councilwoman?
You know, I compare Nikki Lee to the book Where's Waldo? Where's Nikki?
Yeah, Nikki was okay for the first 6 to 12 months. Okay, not great. But then she really... Remember, once she approved the blue line thing and she moved it over when it came over from after it was approved by Ortega, and the mayor just must have came down on her like a load of bricks, then she was done. Done.
Yeah, she hasn't been seen in public unless it was something that was... paid for prior to her being elected, like the water park that was voted for in 2019 or 2018 prior to her seeking election, and she showed up for the dedication. That's about all she's done.
So Ross, we need to get you signatures, several hundred signatures by Monday.
eQual, the Arizona Secretary of State website, Ward 4 City Council. Also, we have newly printed petitions that are available this morning. And we're going to do it. We're a team. We have a great team. Dave Smith has been great during this whole thing, and he's putting together a signature blitz because I am going to be on the ballot in the city of Tucson, and I am going to make a change, especially after the mother of my children was murdered here right in city limits, and it took me to find the car that he stole from her because the answer was the city of Tucson does not have enough resources at this time. I called SWAT or the sergeant, and they sent SWAT to come take him and the vehicle down.
So how do we? So they got to go to the eQual site at the Secretary of State's, look for City of Tucson Ward 4. How do they find out more about where you're going to be if they? Maybe that they're scared of eQual and they want to go find and handwrite a signature for you. How do they do that?
We'll be putting up booths over at Biscuits, at Broadway and Cold, at Jethro's, at Broadway and Camino Seco, and the Happy Rooster at Sarnoff and 22nd.
Okay.
I really need 40 volunteers, one page, 10 signatures, take about 2 hours, and we can nip this in the bud. We do a signature blitz just like we did for our mayoral candidate, J.L. Wittenbraker, and get it done.
All right. So help Ross get on the ballot, and again, Ward 4 in the city of Tucson. Go to the Equal site at the Secretary of State, or he'll be at Biscuits, Jethro's, and what was the third place? Oh, the Happy Rooster this weekend.
Right, or if they want me to bring them petitions personally, they can email me at ross.kaplowitch, K-A-P-L-O-W-I-T-C-H, @yahoo.com. or notify the Pima GOP, and we will personally bring them petitions to give us an assist.
All right, good luck, sir. Good luck on this. That's Ross Kaplowitch. We come back, free-forming DeSimone for an hour, trouble.